We get on board the G&M Family Market phone line. And welcome to the show, an author of more than a half dozen books, including the novel Blue Hole Back Home, and a brand new novel that is just remarkable entitled A Tangled Mercy, Joy Jordan Lake. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's such a powerful book. I read it over the weekend and couldn't put it down. And of course, you have no way of knowing what's going to happen in the world, but the events of yesterday really bring this home yet again. And I'm looking at the inside cover of the book where it describes it as examining the harrowing depths of human brutality and betrayal and our enduring hope for freedom and forgiveness. And boy, we could use both of those today.
Boy, I'll say thank you for your kind words about the novel, by the way.
The book takes place in Charleston, South Carolina, and takes place over two different time periods, 1822 and 2015. And the setting of the story is so crucial to what goes on. Can you talk about that and why it's so important?
The setting is important, and I really sort of fell in love with Charleston by accident. I was born in Washington, D.C., grew up in East Tennessee, went to graduate school in New England, love Maine, by the way.
Thank you.
And just was doing my doctoral dissertation research and began reading some diaries and letters and slave narratives, and decided to go to Charleston for research and fell in love with the city, and began writing about the Emmanuel AME Church. This was 20 years ago. Several chapters of the historical novel back then that I began were set there, and just began becoming fascinated with a couple of white abolitionist sisters named the Grimkays. And anyway, later added a present-day storyline, and of course then the tragic events of 2015 happened right as I was about to, my agent was about to send the novel out for submission for editors to bid on. And so it's been a strange journey, and just so heartbreaking, and also so inspiring to me, just to watch forgiveness play out, and courage and strength, really over the course of 200 years in that city.
How did that tragedy of 2015 in Charleston change the book?
Well, it, as I said, it was originally, I started it 20 years ago as a historical novel, and then maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I wrote these other books, did other things, just couldn't seem to get this novel right, and then 4 or 5 years ago maybe added a present-day storyline that interwove with the historical novel. Took me a while to feel like I got that right, and truly it was the week that my agent was finally satisfied with it, June of 2015, and she said, do these few more tweaks and then let's send it out. And the morning of June 18th, early morning, I was up writing early in my attic office, and my oldest child came charging down the stairs. I had just slipped down to get some coffee quietly, and she was saying, Mom, turn on the radio. Something horrible has happened in Charleston. And sure enough, this tragedy had happened the night before at a church during Bible study, this tragic shooting. And called my agent, and I knew, and she agreed, we either had to just shelve the book forever, because at that point it ended hopefully. And we thought, how on earth now could it possibly end hopefully? And this is just horrible. And how could we have a book that had all these chapters that took place at Emmanuel AME and not mention the tragedy? And it, it was like someone wrote the book knowing this was going to happen, but then sadistically never mentioned the shooting. And anyway, we waited a long time. I talked with a lot of very wise people. The couple that married my husband and me are both African Methodist Episcopal ministers, as well as doctors. A lot of just wise people, and I ended up tearing out a lot of the present day storyline and adding in this tragedy, but really didn't have to change too much because it was so centered on the church and the history of Charleston. The tagline you read talks about human brutality, and then also just amazing strength and hope. And I think the thing that made me feel like I could I could rewrite this story was the way Charleston itself reacted, with just tremendous forgiveness and unity and love, and so that I could end, you know, or that the novel, the story could end on a note of hope instead of just tragedy. So that's really thanks to those people of Emmanuel Amy and the people of Charleston, and the way they reacted. Otherwise, the book just should have stayed shelved forever.
I'm a history teacher as well, and Portland, Maine, very rich history with the AME Zion Church there. And I was struck by the similarities, even though separated by hundreds of miles and very different cultures. But what that church in Portland provided for the African-American community in terms of a sense of place, a sense of purpose, history, and also sanctuary. And there were so many similarities between those two AME churches.
You know, that's fabulous what you do. That there's not a more important job on earth than being a high school teacher. I have kids in high school, and the teachers make all the difference, so thanks for that. But, you know, and there are all kinds of connections between New England and Charleston, and that's fascinating what you say about the Portland AME Church, because I don't know much about the Underground Railroad in Portland, but I imagine there was some activity there, and just the strength of that denomination is phenomenal. The history there is, I've just been honored and humbled by getting to learn more about it. It's amazing.
How does being from the South, growing up there, influence your understanding of racial injustice?
You know, it's I think being from the South, but also having lived in New England, I think I never even was keenly aware of thinking of myself as a Southerner until I went to graduate school in New England, and you know, have a lot of stories to tell about, you know, my dear colleagues kind of assuming, you know, like, wow, you can read. This is that's pretty cool. Yeah, it must be an exception, huh? Or things like, you know, just little comments like, wow, how did you make it out? You know, there was sort of a, you know, maximum security prison down there. But I developed both a, you know, a love-hate relationship with the land of, you know, that I'd grown up in. And it made me rethink a lot of things from my growing up years, both just, you know, the tremendous community that helped raise me and the nurture I was the recipient of in a small town in the South, but also some very painful incidents growing up. You mentioned a former novel of mine, Blue Hole Back Home, that grew out of a friendship I had as a teenager with a Sri Lankan girl that moved to town, and we were both about 16, 17, and the Klan got involved when she moved to town, and just some painful incidents there. And, you know, I think just trying to put that together in my own head, both as a teenager and as a young adult, how could a place that was so warm and so loving also harbor people who were members of the Klan, and, you know, had that, trying to work that out in my own head. And so I think growing up in the South has made me very just keenly aware of the tensions, and also the beauty, and the people who tried hard to build bridges, and you know, people of courage and compassion. And so it's in a strange way, you wouldn't think a Southerner would be and the person to write this particular book, certainly not a white Southerner. But maybe in some ways, I've been in a strange position to observe some things more keenly because of growing up in the South, and because of being the product, and this is no credit to me, but being the product of a family that really tried to be on the right side of racial injustice, and tried to instill my dad. We ran into a Klan roadblock one time as a kid. I was sitting in the back seat, and they had the road completely blocked off, so you had to stop the car. And a guy in a white sheet tapped with the butt of his rifle on the window of my dad's, on the driver's side. My dad rolled down the window, and the guy stuck a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket in the window along with the muzzle of the rifle and said, "Would you like to donate?" And, you know, incident, my dad, in no uncertain terms, made it clear he would not like to donate. And our car was rocked so violently that my mother's most vivid memory was that the car was going to flip over and kill us all. But I remember just being, as a little kid, I just remember thinking, I kind of thought things might end really badly, but I remember it being so comforting that I knew what my dad was going to say. There was no doubt in my mind that he was going to say no. And I remember that being so comforting that I knew exactly what he would say. And, you know, as an adult with kids of my own now, I try to remember that, you know, I'm not going to always say and do things just right, but to try to make sure I'm passing on those kind of core values to my kids so they will never doubt, you know, what the answer is going to be in some of these tough situations.
We're talking with Joy Jordan Lake. Her book is A Tangled Mercy. Two key characters in the story separated by a couple of hundred years, but Kate Drayton, Tom Russell, seemingly on the surface would have little in common, and yet there's so much that binds them. Can you talk about those connections?
Yes, love to. Kate Drayton was not a hard character for me to sort of get inside the head of, because I was in graduate school myself, floundering in many ways, very busy and very just sort of ready to drop out more than once, you know, overwhelmed with research. And she's someone, and then imagination taking off from there, she's someone also struggling with a deeply troubled family situation and trying to get to the bottom of some family secrets that she's just baffled by and really wounded, deeply wounded by, and an alcoholic mother who was both very loving but very troubled. So she's searching for answers and trying to understand her mother's obsession with researching a 19th century slave revolt and what that connection was and why that obsession and the family going back to Charleston, comes from Charleston originally, but she's ended up at Harvard. And then the slave revolt, based on actual characters, I discovered in graduate school this slave revolt called the Denmark VC slave revolt that I'd never heard of till that point, and began researching it. It was informed on at the last moment, so it never actually happened, but could have involved as many as 9,000 slaves, seems to have been very sophisticated in its reach, even out into the farms and plantations out from Charleston. And I got really interested in a man named Tom Russell, a blacksmith, who was a real person, and he was asked to be the weapon maker of the revolt and initially said no. And he seems to have said no because he could look around and see who had all the weapons and that there was no way this revolt was going to be successful. And he was adamant about not being involved and then for some reason changed his mind and made weapons for the revolt with the proviso that his name never be mentioned and he was just going to do it for pay. And again, that sparked by imagination, you know, saving up perhaps for his freedom or someone else's freedom, and what would have changed his mind suddenly to then become involved. And he had an unusual amount of freedom for an urban slave, still horrific, but at least better than being on one of the outlying plantations. And so he began to, we don't know much about him, but that his character began to fascinate me. And so it seemed oddly natural that those two stories began intertwining in my head, and it was a long road trying to make the stories weave together well, but in my head those two characters were closely connected, just in a longing for freedom, a longing for truth, a longing to protect the people they loved, a longing for answers. And So that's sort of the long version or short version of how that happened.
Well, it is such a powerful book, some harrowing scenes. And I don't want to give anything away, but the scene when punishment comes to some of those who were involved in the revolt is just, it's breathtaking. But ultimately, there is a great humanity in the story. It really is a wonderful read, A Tangled Mercy. Joy Jordan-Lake, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Rich. I so appreciate it.